Welcome to Tips and Sips, an excellent cigar experience. I am your host, Brandon Thompson, and these are my co-hosts, Ashley and Howard.
What's up, guys? How are y'all
today? Great, great, great.
So today we have a very special guest.
Very special guest.
Dwayne, how you doing?
I'm good, good. How's everybody doing?
Great, man. What you smoking?
Today I'm smoking Rocky Patel 60.
Okay.
It's to commemorate his 60th birthday. Full body smoke, pretty solid.
Rocky Patel 60?
Yes, sir.
Okay, nice.
Okay. What are you smoking, man?
I'm smoking that LFD Lavocado.
Okay.
It's a great stick, actually.
Absolutely.
And everybody knows that I'm smoking my Padron.
I'm not smoking today, but I am trying a new liquor. And it is a tequila. It's Código, and it's a 1530 Tablanco that I have. So in place of my cigar, that's what I'm trying for today.
And Howard and I are over here sipping on this Terramana Reposado.
Right, what do you got to go with your cigar?
Made by the Rock himself.
The Rock.
Today I'm drinking a good all-purpose Elijah Craig. Is the rye. If you don't know about it, you need to check it out.
I clean my rims with those.
Do you? Oh, good. Good. It also can be digested.
Oh, there you go. Okay, I get it.
So, Dwayne, you work here.
Yes, yes.
How you like it?
I love it.
What do you do here?
Well, I serve the customers. You know, make sure that they're happy smoking, happy smokers. And pretty much clean the shop, make sure things are in order, make sure people are finding what they need. That's what I do.
You've worked at a few cigar shops in the city, right?
I have. I was at House of Cigar downtown, Humidor Plus, House of Cigar, Huntley Road. Been a few places. I've been around.
But which one do you love the most?
Pipes and Pleasures. This is where it started. So
did you get fired from those or what?
No, actually I walked off on my own terms. Thank you.
Okay.
But
I know you got cigar knowledge. I was wondering because when he asked what you did, you gave the basic job description. Like, you know.
Well, this is home to me because this is where I started smoking. When I first got introduced to cigar smoking, I was in Las Vegas with my brother.
Okay.
And then he got me turned out on cigars, and I came back home, and Pipes and Pleasures was literally in my neighborhood.
All right.
So I went down, and that's how I really got acquainted with the lounge and the etiquette in the lounge and
right.
Getting schooled on the game. And it was a great time because this was about, 12, 13 years ago. And I was really drawn to, like, the labels. When you first start smoking,
you smoking,
like, I want the Lexus and the Rolls Royce, and it had a crazy selection of Opus X's that no one could compete with
right. In
the whole Midwest. So that was like the whole drawing point, because you hear people on the internet talk about, oh, I can't get Opus X anywhere, but like not in my backyard. They have like 10 different sizes. Right. So I've always been here and then became a friend of most of the regulars up here, and the rest is, I hate to say the corny thing, but history, you know what I mean?
I would say that you did a modest intro on what you do because you have selected a bunch of cigars for all of us. And they are, you know your clients, you know what they like. You sit up there and you say, if you like this, you'll like this blend. And you introduced me to a lot because that's why I used to go to the House of Cigars, because you were there. Plus, you know, we drank a lot.
Yeah.
But you introduced me to a lot. You even took me on because they got that for sale rack, and you would take me off of that sometime. And
oh yeah, I'll take you out to grab your hand and take you out and venture out to the pastures.
Right.
Yeah, we had to save a few.
And venture out, yeah.
But I appreciate that.
Your knowledge of cigars is extensive, so you did way more than cleaning windows and opening doors, so I give you that.
Thank you, man. That means a lot coming from you. I appreciate that.
Oh yeah, I don't give out compliments often.
Yeah, I think the audience knows this.
Ever.
No, but I definitely do think that, your role here is a lot bigger than what probably you think, but
right. We
appreciate it.
Yeah, he has a following and everything, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's bringing light skin back to Columbus.
Yeah, we're definitely doing that. Can I get an amen?
Right.
He never left.
He never left.
Okay, well, as a brownie at a group.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
So we are podcasting from pipes and pleasures, as always. Thanks to Miss Iris for having us here. So, how's everybody's day been? How's everybody's week been?
It's smooth sailing for me.
Well, I can't say names, but it's been a hell of a fire week.
Yeah,
I
think we don't do names. So,
right. Yeah. I just think that this understaffing that's been plaguing the whole United States has been ridiculous.
Right.
I think a lot of us feel overworked and just don't really see an end to this type of production that they are expecting out of us.
Right.
So it's been a tremendous week. I've been definitely sipping a little bit more than normal this week. But I'm happy that, you know, not necessarily happy by the circumstances, but I'm happy for Martin Luther King's birthday being commemorated on Monday.
Martin Luther the King.
Yes, absolutely. I can look forward to 3 days to, you know, decompress and hopefully reset my mind for another work week. But
you got cigars you smoke on special events or anything like that? Or you just smoke whatever you feel like that
every day is a special event.
That's how I feel.
If you're feeling that certain way, you should smoke good. You know, if you're feeling like, I'm not going to be paying attention to this, get you a knock-around smoke for that day.
It's funny, though, because, like, most people celebrate, you know, when they get the good cigars. When I have the absolute worst day, that's when I get my best cigars out.
That's nice.
And I just sit back and I just, you know.
And meditate to it.
Yeah.
That's the best thing about a good cigar.
Right.
In my opinion.
It opens up, you know, knowledge. It opens up, like, there's a lot of camaraderie in here, though. You've met a lot of people since you've been working.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, even though you got fired from all the places.
Really? Absolutely.
You've met a lot of people, right?
I have. I've met a lot of people.
You befriended them or what?
Some. You know, we have to itemize people. Let's be honest. I'm not going to sit here and lie on this podcast. Right. But you have your, you know, people that you type bond. You got acquaintances. And then you got some like, you know, you gotta love them at a distance.
Right.
Absolutely. More on the earlier ones I mentioned, but definitely you make a lot of friends and acquaintances and you know, being in the cigar industry or necessarily just coming to visit one, you know?
I got the one question I wanted to ask both of y'all since y'all here. Do you know how you go to, you know, remember you go get a car, you go get, you know, everybody's trying to upsell. You being cigar aficionados, do you upsell or do you like literally stay to give people that flavor, or how do you do it? How do you choose what to do?
Me, I definitely I don't try to upsell. If there's an event and we have a feature cigar, then yes.
Okay.
If something that's exclusive that people haven't had,
right?
I'm gonna show you what's the caviar. But for my dailies, people coming here in the lounge. You need that authenticity. So I'm going to give you what you regularly like. And if you're trying to venture out and you tell me that, then I'm going to naturally tell you what would be in that same kind of realm or that wheelhouse that would maybe challenge your palate and give you something new to look forward to.
Yeah.
But I only upsell if it's a special event and it's a special product for a special occasion, because I want people to experience that on that special occasion, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so that's very similar for me. I don't really try to upsell. And the other thing that goes along with that is that you're trying to sometimes create the longevity with that person. So if, you know, I upsell you and I'm only focused on upselling you, I'm not really focused on your palate, I'm less likely to get a return out of you, which, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Your customers that come and build longevity with you are the people that keep the lights on, you know? So you don't, I think, you know, I'm very similar in that. I'll do it for, like, special events. And then there are some people who come in and who are looking to be wowed in that way. So, you know, you know that you recognize that they're, that, like you said, they're kind of in that stage looking for the Cadillacs and all that stuff and the Funebos and all that. And so you upsell them, you know, and they're
fine
with
that. Those are the ones that come in and be like, all I ever smoke is Cubans, which y'all got like.
Right. You know what I mean? And so they're looking to be wowed and they're looking for that price value really to wow them as well. And you know that they may come in and wander in every now and again, but when it comes to people that you see longevity in, you definitely want to sell them, you know, what they're looking for and try to cater to their flavor more than anything, because they appreciate that, just like you said, you know, being able to kind of pull you out of your comfort zones or give you new suggestions, they appreciate that way more.
Okay. And you know, I want you to come back. So
yeah.
Right.
Y'all good people later.
Y'all have a good night.
Well, You know, we just saw some value clients. But the same thing is, like, what good are you if I don't give you a good experience? You're not going to come back and see me.
That's my what cigars is all about.
I want you
man.
To come back.
You're right. You're exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's why I don't ever try to take somebody above their head. Mm-hmm. I want them to understand what they're smoking. Mm-hmm. That's how I do it.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite smoke, Wayne?
Mm.
What's your daily smoke first?
Well, lately, because daily's changed. Lately, I've been smoking the Fonsecas. By my father.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I actually gifted one to him for his birthday to Howard. And that, but if my all time favorite, I'm going to say if I could really afford to smoke on a regular, the Cohiba Maduro Cuban. Oh, it's fantastic. But they're like ridiculously expensive. But I mean, you're talking about like pure milk chocolate. I mean, it's amazing smoke. So if you ever get your hands on some and you want to pay that coin, definitely worth it.
Great. You smoke every day?
Try not to, but sometimes I find myself smoking a nub or something to kind of, you know, enjoy my little oasis, mm-hmm. right? But I try to keep it to the days I work lately. I smoke 3 days a week. Try to. Okay. Like, I'm obviously not working today, so this is forfeit, right? So okay. That's what I do.
Now, what about you? What's your favorite smoke?
CAO Brazilian. The greatest smoke ever.
A great smoke, not your cheap go.
No, he said that's
his wow.
That's the greatest smoke ever.
Man, that is so harsh to me. Because you know I'm a media
That's because you got baby lungs.
There you go.
You got baby lungs.
There you go. You're exactly right.
In lights only.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, that's a full stick, man. So what's your favorite... Then your go-to then, since that's your CAO.
I mean, I try everything. You know, okay. I come in and I see something that I've never smoked.
We literally say, "People, what have you tried? What have you not tried?" Actually, right. That's what we do. Okay. I mean, what have you not tried?
I like
yet?
To try everything, but that's my go-to. CAO Brazilian.
I get you.
And we know you, Mr.
That's
Padron.
That's it. Yep.
Padron Natural, butt neck.
Family Reserve is my absolute favorite. You know, I do prefer the regular anniversaries as opposed to the 26. I know we had that discussion the other day.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, and the 26 is fine by me, but, you know, price point and everything, I'm real happy with the anniversary.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can answer for Ashley. Is your favorite cigar still the Gurkha?
No,
infused.
You
changed it.
I haven't even had one of those in like forever. We haven't been able to get a hold of any. But I think my every, I don't smoke every day. But if I had like an everyday go to, it would definitely probably be the Hellcat. Because that's just enough for me. It's not too far into the mediums, but also not like super mild, which is kind of cool. But I would say if I had an absolute favorite that I've smoked more recently, I would say it would probably be either the My Father's that we smoke,
the
Las Antillas, or right. I'd say like the Spanish Press actually was kind of impressed with that one.
I like those too.
Yeah.
That's a good smoke.
You know, I have not had the Spanish Press yet. I'm slipping.
It's pretty good.
That's
it's
my
pretty,
next
yeah,
thing.
And I don't
good.
Like a lot of different sticks.
Yeah,
I like La Gloria, though.
It's
pretty good.
I do have another question. I don't mean to keep putting y'all's job on the spot, but this is a curious thing. You know, since the pandemic went on, there's been a lot of shortage of cigars and supplies of cigars, you know, and because like a lot of the factories shut down for times because
multiple times.
Right. Yeah. And now you're having the thing where people coming in requesting things. Like, how do you handle that? Like, is it hurting your business or does it help create new business by introducing them to things? How do you handle that?
I think it's kind of a I mean, how you look at it. For me, I feel like it doesn't really hurt us for the reasons that you said, because it does give me an opportunity to talk to them about something, you know, other things. And usually what I'll do is if they're looking for something specific, I'll try to say, well, you know, we don't have that, but let me show you what will fit that same flavor profile that you're going for,
okay,
or as close as we can get. And then you have some people who are chasing that one thing, that's all they want.
Right.
But you have the other people who usually they're open to suggestions when it comes to that, because you can usually get pretty close to what they're looking for in terms of what's, you know, the wrapper, filler, and the binder, so.
Okay, I get that.
I try to hear the, you know, the client out, and I try to let them know what we do have, you know. If something that is obviously worth getting, I'll let management know, you know, and something that they, you know, especially if it's a hot request. So I want to make sure that they know that they're being heard.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then I'll go from there. I'll kind of know from my palate, and I've smoked pretty much, I've been around, and I'll give them some recommendations if they are willing to hear those. For the time being, but I will always pass it on what recommendations, because at the end of the day, you know, there's so many different cigars,
right?
So we're not going to really please everyone,
right?
You know, I'm just being honest, but what I can do is find stuff that, you know, if you like Nicaraguan Puros, I may put you onto this Nicaraguan Puro, you know.
Okay.
So a lot of times you'll find that you turn a customer on better that way. And usually, like we know, we all men here, take a woman, she's never been a place she's never been before.
Right.
She want to see you again. You know what I mean? Same thing with cigar smokers. If I take you somewhere you ain't never been before, but you liked it, you might come back and repeat, because I done opened your mind up. I done piqued your interest. You know what I mean?
So and I mean, you plant the seed that there's other things that are very similar to what you're looking for that you may not have, you know, necessarily thought about. So it creates a kind of curiosity for some of them, especially in their early stages of smoking,
right?
That allows us to, you know, keep putting them on to different things as they come back, because they know that now, you know, that there are across different brands and, you know, different things, that there's something that probably will fit them and what they're looking for.
Right.
So Dwayne, you're in a relationship, right?
Yes, I am.
So does your significant other smoke?
She'll smoke on an occasion. She hasn't smoked in a while, though. I think she did that to bag me.
To bag you?
Yeah, she hasn't smoked in a while.
So how she handle the smoke once you get home from the shop and you smell like cigars?
I'm going to tell you, man, this is the most easiest that I've relationship I've ever been in the sense of that. Like, I've been in relationships where, like, you smell like smoke and this. I've been married and, you know, had that significant other, quotation marks, people out there that will tell me, you know, you smoke too much or you smell or this and that. And it really wasn't a comfortable situation, because, you know, but I feel like the woman I'm seeing now, she accepts me for who I am. And that's dope, because I really never think about it until you mentioned it just now, because she doesn't make me think about it.
That's cool.
You know, and I'm also, I have good hygiene. I like to wash my ass. But you know, even when I come home, you know, she doesn't mind to send up some smoke on a, you know, with some nice designer cologne under top.
Right.
Whereas it used to be an issue. So I didn't know that was a major key until now, but it is.
Oh, I get that, because my new roomie, I have a can of Febreze at the door, so
yeah.
I gotta spray myself down. Since I walk in, so I understand.
Dramatic.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's.
But what you got, what you introduced me to, was something different. Like, so after I get done smoking, I usually go home, I brush my teeth, and then I wash my face, you know. But he introduced me to flushing my nose, you know. Mm-hmm. And Dwayne said, you know, because I was telling him that I get a little congested, like especially on smoke days where I smoke a lot. Mm-hmm. So now I actually flush my nose. And then blow it, and it's a whole different ballgame. It just changes everything.
So
you're welcome, man.
Thank you. Dwayne got me into a new style of smoke, a retro heller.
Oh yes, yes.
And I still haven't got it down. I almost died choking trying to do it.
But you folks smoke a little full. I don't know if you want to do it with that.
Retro.
Can you explain that, please?
Absolutely. It's just when you're taking the notes of the cigar in, and you're breathing the smoke out your nose. So essentially you're locking the back of your throat, and instead of letting it pass out your mouth like normal, you don't want to retrohale a full puff of smoke. Okay. You want to let a little bit, I would say 60% of it, pass out your mouth first. Save a little, lock your throat, and then breathe out your nose. What happens is you experience different layers of the flavor in your palate.
Oh, okay.
And your cigar experience will be, okay. It really enhances it. Like, things that you thought you weren't tasting in that smoke, along with good hygiene, like you said, keeping your nasal passages clean. I use a tongue scraper at times. And I usually will drink water or a black coffee if I'm trying a cigar for the first time until I know what I like to pair
coffee
it with.
And cigars is great.
Yeah. So those things are great. But retrohaling is just pretty much just breathing out the smoke through your nose, having the skill to, like, you know, just lock the back of your throat so you're not inhaling it in your lungs, but then pushing it out of your nostril. You're going to taste, it's a crazy enhancement to your flavor wheel. I think you guys, could y'all attest to that? I've never tried it, but I've been seeking that.
Because everyone talks about this has this taste to it, this has that. And I don't taste all these things that they're saying.
Oh, yeah. That will definitely enhance it. Like, but the key is, don't try to put a full puff out your nose. That
I'm not going to do a Brazil.
Yeah, no, it would.
One of Brandon's.
It would burn and it would hurt like crazy. I tried it. And I got it. And it does, what he was saying is actually true. You can taste a little bit different. And I think, well, the science behind it, obviously, is your olfactory sense is, you know, connected to your taste. So the same kind of thing that happens when you lose your taste, when you get a cold, you know, putting it through that same filter, essentially.
So you always use that private school, the source on us, that, you know, matter
Well,
what.
If they gave me the words to use, I'm going to use them.
I like that.
I paid for them.
I'm going to have to research that word, though.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, your old factories.
I mean, it's really... Once you do that, you probably never go back. It's like the Matrix.
Okay.
I'm serious. It's like, but you, the fuller the smoke, the less smoke people that you want
to
pass
out. But you already said, put out about 70% and then bring the rest.
Okay. But if you're on a full body, don't try to do it unless you're trying to wake up for the evening, because it will ring your bell.
Okay, so while we're on this podcast, Brandon, could you see it? And could we see you do it? And
I don't know how to do it. Like I said, I've been trying to do it.
So the world can hear you choke.
And I never got it down.
It takes practice. It does.
It takes time.
But you, if you've smoked other things, it's a very similar motion.
Well, that's too.
But I was saying, if you smoked other things in your lifetime, there, you know, there is a very similar motion in
like
that.
What? Like what?
You know, we call it alternative forms of smoking here.
Is that Pall Mall? No,
we call it alternative forms, you know, the dry herb, if you will. If you've done that before, you make a similar motion with that, so it's a little easier probably to get, but if not, work on it.
Only thing I smoke besides cigars is turkey. I love smoked turkey. Just saying, but that's my fat problem.
That sounds good, right? sounds like me. And you need to go hook that up.
Right.
I just came from Roosters actually just now, like a pig. Job been stressing me out, man. I go
but
to happy
you
hour.
Were drinking though.
I was drinking Yinglings. I'm sorry, people. I'm an American. I love my American beer. I love the Yingling. I don't care about any of that other special import stuff.
Okay.
That's my drink. Modelo, Heineken still my favorite, but Yingling is my top dog.
Yeah.
And the fact that they $3 for a tall boy, can't beat it from 5 to 7.
Wow, yeah.
Shameless plug, I'm just saying.
Shameless plug.
So do you suggest smoking and drinking beer, or does it change the palate at all? Or
I'll tell you, I like smoking when I have a stout beer. Pilsners, gold, lagers, they don't do nothing for me. That's me, though. Some people feel different, but, like, I feel like IPAs are really good for other herbal consumptions. It adds to the experience, but it doesn't do the same for cigars. But if you get you a dark stout, you're drinking stouts before, right?
Yeah.
Like a Guinness.
I'm not a beer drinker, though.
Those are good with cigars to me. Like the darker, richer, you know, like where they almost like a coffee stout.
Right.
But I don't like pairing cigars with beer. I'm not a fan like that.
Okay.
I feel like beer has a very specific taste that I just,
it goes good with something else, but don't go good with tobacco to me.
So I used to drink beer and honey buns. I used to love that.
What?
That was my thing.
Bro, that's wild.
Coors Light and a honey bun. I used to, I'm telling you, for some reason, it set it off.
It sounds like low-key good. I'm thinking
carbs and carbs.
Right. Carbs and more carbs.
I ain't get thick from running miles, damn it. Just saying.
So I got a topic I want to talk about.
Okay.
To be a little bit transparent. Recovering from a setback. You ever had something that kind of changed your life or set you back and put you at back to square one? And how'd you recover from it?
Dwayne, who's me first?
You, we'll put you in the spot first.
Well, absolutely. I think that setbacks are customary to life if you're going to grow. If you're going to exist, if you're willing to accept setbacks and bounce back, that is one of the key ingredients to character in life to me. But I had a setback, what, 5-6 years ago. I was divorced of like 9 years. I had lost my job. Talking about, I started at ground zero. Mom Dukes came through with an envelope with $600. Let me stay with her for 6 months and I rebuilt my life.
Oh, okay.
And you know, due to God's grace, first place, two places I applied to, I got the job. And I chose the place that I'm at now. Because I like, I'm very loyal. So like, I'll stay with you for years. I don't really like job hopping. Okay. I get comfortable, I get vested in the pension, I'm gonna stick with you. So I definitely have experienced that. And it can be very humbling, but I think that the thing that's most important is just persevering. You know, like, I always tell my friends, I got a lot of guys that have now followed through and got divorced too. And it's not to their own hands, but you know, sometimes things change, right?
Right.
So I just kind of stay in their ear and I try to like coach them, like, you know, good times don't, you know, bad times don't stay that way for long. Things go bad to get better, you know, like, you know, cats really be feeling helpless out here. You know, I just thank God for that, man. Like, hitting our lowest point, I remember that. I was in my parents' basement for about 4 or 5 months, and I was just working between, you know, losing one job, got started another one, rebuilt that, got my apartment, and you know, that was a very humbling time. My son was there with me day one, you know, and I don't know, I honestly can't say that I wouldn't have as much swag if I didn't have these setbacks. You dig what I'm saying?
That's what I was, and the ability to pay it forward. What changed the most, like you as a person, you know, you knew who you were before it happened, but what changed, like, what type of person were you after it happened?
Well,
like, what did you learn from it? Or
okay, well, being married, I would say that more so I was, you know, young when I got married. So
okay.
I was insensitive to different things that made me irresponsible enough to be married. I wasn't really ready for marriage.
Okay.
You know, I didn't know that. I thought I was, but I wasn't, because I wasn't emotionally stable to, like, I mean, I was good.
Right.
But I really don't, like, I wasn't sensitive to my partner's needs. You know what I mean? Now, mind you, I didn't also know that, you know, those fatherly issues, which might be another show, would pull on my strings a little bit harder.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, whether she had daddy issues or not, I was not there to hear her emotionally. So okay. One thing it taught me was, you know, when a woman is saying her grievances, you know, you have to listen and be urgent. Not necessarily being a simp, ladies and gentlemen out there.
Clarify that.
What is
clarify
a simp?
That. Clarify that.
Just bending over backwards, you know. It's nothing wrong with being submissive to your woman. And a man and a woman being submissive to her man. It goes two ways. We have to take heed and listen to our partners.
Right.
At the same time, there could be a point where they start shit testing you.
Right, right, right.
And you have to be privy to that. And you have to be able to not lose your identity. Right. That's being a simp. When you lose it's your like identity you, as a man
when
or a
you
person.
Sitting down now instead right. of standing up.
To me. When you're doing stuff that you're right. completely sacrificing what your principles are,
right.
you're a simp.
Can we also clarify, though, that word submissiveness? Because a lot of people just, and especially when it comes to, in relation to that word simp, because A lot of people don't know that submission is cooperativeness, okay?
Yes.
And agreeableness.
A lot of black women hate that word, but it's not a bad word.
It's not a bad word, but I think that they hate what comes with it because a lot of people misconstrue that word and use the wrong terminology and misinterpret what that actually means. But it really means cooperativeness. And so that's why, like, when people think that that goes one way and how he said that, you know, men can be, you know, submissive as well, it's just cooperativeness. And that can be simple as, hey, can you stop at the store and grab me, you know, some noodles on your way home? You know, he obliges you. That's what it is, more than, you know, more than the other things that a lot of people try to throw in there. And so, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, the simps and all that, they try to, like, demonize being cooperative with your lady. Right. And that's, I just wanted to clarify that. That's not a bad thing, like you said, at all.
Ain't nothing wrong with complying with something that your lady wishes, as long as she's doing the same for you.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying we're doing this for tit for tat, but you should be learning. A relationship to me now is learning how to love unselfishly. That's more of an indictment on yourself than that person, that partner.
Right.
And then you do your inventory for yourself externally, whether you're getting back what you need, and you're doing a reassessment. But you definitely don't want to get in a tit for tat.
So we had this discussion the other day. You said unselfishly. What about unconditionally? Remember that.
Well, I thought we were talking about setbacks, but not to get too real.
Say I love unconditionally, but that is a challenge.
Now I'm putting indicted. Now you're gonna get me indicted, but I think that personally, my personal thinking is that a woman's love is conditional. The only unconditional love by a woman is from a mother, and you have to make deposits with women. A man, you know, we can love the same raggedy ass woman and we'll love her dirty draw. She'll have our mind. Now, even if you're a savage, right, and you out here got other chicks on the side, they don't mean shit to you because you know your raggedy ass rag muffin is at home and you love her and you ain't trading her in for nobody.
Unconditional.
Meanwhile, them checks stop coming in and you stop putting them time deposits in with a woman, things will change up on your ass real quick.
Oh my god. Who said that? Chris Rock. Only women and kids get love unconditionally.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean...
See, Dwayne introduced me to cigars and this, because I was like, you know, I thought unconditional
Dwayne hit me to some stuff, too.
Right. He dropped in knowledge.
He's a young black Dr. Phil.
Right. He got them gems, man.
You learn from
he
you
is
know,
light
mistakes.
Skinned because the sun shines on him all day. All day.
No, so I think that a lot of men that we get caught up and think that when we hear it's not unconditional, fellas. You gotta continually feed that animal, you gotta make deposits, and you gotta love on that in that situation. You gotta keep pouring into it, and hopefully when you do your inventory, she's pouring into you. That's the way it's supposed to work.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, we're supposed to lead. And if we're leading and your woman's not following you or reciprocating, then you need to do a reassessment of the company you keep. But it's nothing wrong with doing that, in my opinion.
Right. I agree with that wholeheartedly. How do you feel about that, Ashley?
I agree with the most. I mean, I think that there is a such thing as unconditional love, but I mean, I just think that's also just speaks to what you put a lot of value in terms of what's important to you, because, you know, if I'm someone who has my own money, which I do, it's...
She had to leave that for the record.
And that's because she doesn't pay for dinner when she goes out. Shots fired.
That's a smart woman, okay? That's what that is. But, you know, if you have your own money or whatever, and so, you know, maybe that is not necessarily the most valuable thing to me. So, you know, we've talked about it, and I realized how much more, like, feeling safe, how that's a higher priority on my list than being financially stable. So, for me, it, you know, it's not conditioned on, you know, like you said, when, like, the check stopped, that doesn't stop, you know, it's more so, if I've told you that these things are valuable to me, you know, you stop doing them, well, then what are we doing here? You know what I mean? Because I'm not getting fulfilled in the ways that I like, but also it's a reciprocation. If you're not being filled in the ways you like either, because your thing may not necessarily be money either. Yours may be quality time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yours may be, you know, gifts or whatever, you know, whatever it is. If I'm not giving those to you, and we haven't talked about that either, and I'm just trying to love you the way I like to be loved, then of course you're going to feel like, you know, it's conditional or it's not, you know, it's not a balance there.
You
but I think
your love language.
Yeah, and I think absolutely. That you have to continually give that on both sides. And so I don't think it's conditional. I just think that's a matter of you and your partner being on the same page as what you guys would be like to give and take for real. But I mean, anybody though who's not getting what they need out of their relationship, either like you said, you need to reevaluate or go your separate ways, because I think there's too many people and too little time to waste it where you're not being fulfilled in the ways that you're very clear on that you like.
Absolutely.
So what about a setback?
Right. So have I ever had experience?
She's a Capricorn, y'all. She's about to hit y'all.
Yeah. I think probably one of my bigger setbacks happened to me in college, actually.
Oh, okay, we talked about that.
Yeah, it happened to me in college. So I had this whole idea of what I was going to do, where I was going to go to college. And I ended up having to basically make some decisions that I thought were good for my family. And good for my family's finances and things like that. And so I went to a school that I didn't really love, but I was like, it makes sense, you know. And so that it was a major setback for me, because that was like a source of like a lot of my discovery of depression and all this other stuff when I went there, because I didn't want to be there. And so that was like really probably like one of the hardest times in my life, because like that was the first time I ever experienced anything like that, and I didn't have a whole lot of like places to look, because I wasn't really making friends. I mean, I was making friends, but like not friends that I felt comfortable or safe to talk about that kind of stuff with. And so I was kind of like just struggling with it on my own and not really knowing what was happening, you know, to me. And actually I ended up meeting some kids from California, and they were like explaining to me like that they had to take like vitamin D, and a lot of them were struggling with seasonal depression as well. And so that was like kind of the light bulb for me, and I was like, okay, well now I have a name for it, so now I can kind of like, you know, figure out what does this mean, what does this look like for me, and how do I get past it. And I think you know, it's just like when you hit your bottom, you realize like you only can go up, because if you don't, it's like life or death, really. You're at a point where you were at life or death, and I was just like, I gotta save myself. So, you know, it was a lot of like mental work, and it was a lot of learning to be happy with where I was, because like you said, it's not forever, and that, you know, if I dwell on this, it's gonna take longer than if I were to just, you know, look at the glass half full kind of deal. So yeah, it was, I mean, you know, it was difficult. I'm talking, you know, I came home like skinny, like I'm talking about in a medium, like I was thin. I was sleeping like ridiculous amounts of time. Like I would only wake up to go to class. I would skip lunch. I would skip breakfast. I would skip dinner, and then I would go to the gym. So I'm burning, you know, 1200 calories in the gym, and you know, another 2000 throughout my day. So I got very thin, you know, from my freshman to sophomore year. I even called home the second week of school, like, this is not it. And she was like, well, you either gonna find a job or go to the military. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm not doing either one of those, so we're gonna work it out, I guess. Right. We're gonna figure it out.
Right.
But I mean, it was a difficult time, and especially being given that level of independence, and you're going through all those transitions, and my school was very different socially too. That was another big thing for me. It was very different from what I experienced before, so it was a little bit of a culture shock. So just experiencing all those emotions all at one time was very overwhelming at first. So, but I mean, you know, I got through. I made it through. I mean, there were some other minor setbacks in there as well, but you just look at it like either literally like, this is gonna kill me, or I'm gonna pick myself up and figure it out.
Setbacks. You know, I'm 53, so you know, I've had a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I threw myself out there a whole lot, because I had a huge ego. So I tried a whole lot of things that I shouldn't have been trying. The reason why I said Capricorn is because we plan everything. And when it goes wrong, it just feels like you can't breathe.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I'm talking like if you ever had somebody just throw their knee on your chest, you know, you can't swallow, you can't, nothing tastes good, the air ain't fresh, you know what I mean? Everything's out of place, everything's out of whack until you get it back. I would say my last major is what we talked about the last time, is my mom passing. the one thing that I do say all the time is every time that you go through some type of hardship or even some kind of, you know, something you can cheer about, I always say, what have you learned from that? You know, so I remember the day before she passed, she asked me, she said, I know you don't talk to people. She said, I know you don't, you know, you don't reach out to people. I don't know, you don't, you know, you don't answer your phone a lot. It's like, I'm going to need you to start talking to people. And I'm going to need you to, you know, you're not by yourself.
Can I just cut in and also say that was one of the biggest things that I learned is to, because I'm like you, I'm against help. You know, I feel like I can do it on my own. Right. I can figure it out. And how are you going to help me if you don't, you know, you don't know me that well. And that was one of the bigger things that I figured out was to start asking for help and ask for it early. Don't wait till you drown it to be asking for help and to be okay with knowing that you need help.
Thanks for taking my minutes, Ashley. So what I did learn, we've talked about this. Mm-hmm. I reached out to, you know, and I tell this all the time, these people were on my mom's deathbed talking about, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. None of them. Mm-hmm. They did nothing. It's fine. But the ones who sat back and watched were the ones who waited to see what I needed. You know what I mean? And I never like asking for anything. I can't stand it. But I know that from my last setback that I can't handle everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know that one thing my dad taught me is you don't need to know how to do everything. You just need to know somebody who can do it. So I start reassessing the people in my life. And I would say with my setback, I had to restructure how I thought about people, how I looked at people, and, you know, their value and their worth with me, you know. And I'm not saying if you're not bringing anything to the table, I'm not dealing with you, but I just know that you can't depend on a lot, but there's some that are thorough, you know, and there's some that are really, really down with you, and they're going to try to help you. Now, also, there's also people that's going to jump on you when they see you making that next come up, and they want to jump on it with you, and they were not there when it's for you. So I learned my last setback, I realized that my come up is going to be the glory for a few, but not for the many. You know what I mean? And I won't shine it in front of people, but I'll let people know, you know, what I've been through and what they helped me through. And I from there, because, you know, I'm a very humble person, so it's not extremely humble. I can joke, but I don't get personal with people, you know. I don't bring out my shortcomings. I don't bring out my joys. I don't bring out my celebrations. People, you know, I just kind of go with the flow. But from here on, there's when things happen to me that are good, there's people that I actually dial and say, thank you. You know what I mean? Like, even if they didn't have anything to do with it, they got me through something that allowed me to shine in this aspect. So what I learned from that situation is my shine and my glory is not my own. You know, and I realize also my lows are not mine alone to handle. You know what I mean? Because I was one, you know, I'm not big into, I have the thing where people, you know, you got friends, you got family, whatever. Friends do what they want to do for you. Family does because they feel guilty about it. But if you have a friend that you call family, they will do no matter what.
Right.
And that's what I'm learning. I'm learning of the newfound, this is my family. And shout out to Vin Diesel and Fast and the Furious. They was all, you know, coming from different aspects. But the love that they have for each other, you know, is like unconditional. Like, no matter what, I'm going to be there. And I found a few of those, and I never knew they existed. So that's what I learned.
You might have a tissue.
Oh, my shit's a tear jerker.
That was good. That was good.
What about you?
Right, what about you, B? What's a setback that you've gone through?
So I had a major setback in my life. 2011. I actually caught a case, got a felony, and lost my job, lost my home, you know, had to go back to my mom's house and everything. Lost everything. Actually, those 4 years after that were the hardest years for me. Everybody trying to get a job, right. You know, having a felony, you know, everybody judging you, you know, people turn their back on you and they look at you different. Like, you're not that same person they always knew because you made one mistake, you know. So I had to deal with a lot of judgment also from people, you know, family and friends. But I had a few people in my life that really took care of me and that really helped me get over that. But I had to keep pushing. There were times I wanted to give up. You know, made me question my religion. Actually changed my religion. It actually changed my religion. But I went
through. You're no longer Baptist.
This made me think, you know, made me think of a lot of things. Like you said, you know, you had people who you thought were there for you, then when you were completely down, they kind of looked down on you.
Right.
Like, I had my car repoed and everything. You know, I was completely out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I just learned that you have to sometimes, like, I learned that nobody's coming to save you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? That's what I learned. Nobody's coming to save you. If you want this, you have to get up and get it, you know,
because
I was fired from jobs, I was working temp services, then, you know, after that 90 days, they can't hire me because I'm a felon, you know, and it was about 4 years I went through this, you know.
Oh, wow.
And and then I finally got that job. There were times where I wanted to give up and just quit all the way, you know, but I got stuck with it.
So I got a question for you. So do you remember that turning point or the succession of moments that kind of were like your turning point to where you're like, okay, I think I'm gonna be all right. Like, I'm gonna, you know, get through this. I'm gonna be straight.
Yeah, I remember the exact moment. I was at home. I was working a Thursday job. They fired me, you know. And I was just sitting at home and I was just thinking to myself, I gotta do something, you know, because I had my daughter. You know, she was about 6 months, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was just looking at her like, I can't, you know, I can't fail her, mm-hmm. you know. So, and I just kept going.
Mm-hmm. You know? That's what's up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, would you say,
Black pappies, man, I'm
going
like
through that for everybody, would you say that you're kind of happy you had that experience, as disheartening and as low as you were? Would you have as much swag as you do today? And being able to pay it forward. Exactly.
I mean, I would not want to relive those moments.
Absolutely not.
I'm glad.
Exactly.
But I'm glad that I went through it.
Yeah. Right.
Because it made me grow as a person.
Yes.
It made me care more about me. You know, it made me be more responsible and take things serious. Because, you know, when you never go through anything, you're just like,
crazy.
Nothing can happen to me.
Yeah.
You know,
you kind of have
that invincible, arrogant feeling, like, you know,
you don't appreciate
good.
It as much.
Yeah,
if
you never learn heartache, you never learn happiness.
Yeah.
So when you lose everything, then you appreciate everything
right,
you get from
right,
there on.
Right.
And that's how I feel now. I appreciate everything, you know. And I learned also not to judge anybody.
Oh, man.
Because people go through a lot of stuff, and you never know what that person has gone
through.
You know, and I learned that a lot.
Or currently going through,
you never know what that person is going through.
Never.
Yeah.
That's the fact. So what about for you? Was there a moment that you can remember that, you know, or a succession of moments that you can remember that kind of were your turning point?
Like a turning point for... Like, just...
For your setback. Like, when you kind of felt like, all right, I got a kind of handle on this. Like, it might not be where I know that I'm headed, but, like, I'm going to be straight. Like, I'm finally coming out on the other side of that.
I just think that things happen for reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I was working at a big, prominent bank, and I was, like, there for 8 years, and I lost my job. It's crazy shit. I don't want to get into the details. It's a little sticky. I'll tell you off here. But it wasn't nothing crazy, but I got let go for it, so... I'm out here, and then it was crazy because my brother was working at a place, another prominent place, and he was like, we're hiring, and they normally don't put a ring on it. Like, if you've been out here in the corporate world, they want to make you a contractor and just dangle that associate position with the benefits and everything. So I had got my Series 7 at this bank I worked at for 8 years. And that was my key.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like, God's divine intervention. He knew I was going to need that. because he had to humble me because I was an asshole. I still am a jerk. Right. I'm no longer an asshole, but I'm a jerk sometimes.
Right.
And he had to humble me. And I applied for that. I applied for two jobs, and that was the one I selected. And I didn't have to go through none of that contract. Like, oh, you got your seven? Mm-hmm. You got your bachelor's degree? We're going to make you an associate. Mm-hmm. And that was uncanny because normally they was just like, all right, if we like you, then we'll make you an associate. And they make these people go through hoops. And so that was really like, turning point where I was like, everything going to be all right. Everything going to work out, you know. And couldn't be in a better situation. I'm way more compatible with the woman I'm seeing now.
You have a glove to you.
Stop it, bro. I am pregnant. Thank you, everyone. Pregnant right. with chicken wings. But, she's happier. You know, she met somebody. And, my son is happy. We came from my marriage. So I couldn't ask for a better situation. He's got a good network of people around him, a good support system.
Right.
People that love him, her significant other, and mine. And I felt like these all happened because he knew he had something better for me too, and something better for her too, you know. So I wouldn't live it again, like Brandon said, but I damn sure happy that it happened, you know.
Right,
I mean?
Right, yeah. You
because I was working,
appreciate it, but you don't want to deal with that shit never.
Right, man. I was working 70-hour weeks, you know, to make what I make now.
Yep.
And I'm not nearly as happy, you know. Yeah. So
I get it. I thought that, like, I remember telling my mom when she passed, before she passed, that I was like, you know, this is pretty much it. You know, I had the conversation with Brandon and my other nephews, and I was like, you know, before she even passed, I was like, you know, if this happens, I'm out, you know. And I was about to go back to Charlotte, but, you know, talking to them and, you know, everybody want to talk about network or whatever like that, man. It's not about that, man. It's about the love, you know what I mean? And not just the people you love, but the people who love you, you know. And I realized, you know, when I first came back, the first thing I realized is that I was gone for 7 years in Charlotte. And to me, as I look back on that, I did need that, but it was a selfish move because when I came back, it was like, in a sense, he needed me, Brandon needed me, and my mom needed me. And I realized that, you know, people do depend on you in a way that you don't realize.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm realizing that now because of my setback, that I'm dependent on people that I never thought, and they would never thought I would depend on them. And the whole appreciation has changed my whole aspect now. Like, I 53 with no kids, so I was a nomad, you know what I mean? Like, I just did anything I wanted, went anywhere I wanted, and I just lived my life.
Yeah.
But now I know that, you know,
that purpose,
right? And yeah, it's a totally different game now, you know. So I learned a lot, and I appreciate a lot, you know. I appreciate a lot. What'd you say, Brandon? I only told you I loved you when I was drunk. But now I can tell him now, because it's real, and I know that he needs it, and I need to let him know.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because, like, when my mom passed, I had no regrets of anything because we lived it, we loved it, and we expressed ourselves. But I realize now other people need that, too. I used to think, like, you know, he was straight because he had his wife, he had his family, whatever, but there's other things that you need, too. You know what I mean? And absolutely, I learned that. You know what I mean? I learned that I actually matter to other people.
Absolutely.
Never knew that. So, yeah, learned a whole lot. Appreciate it, couldn't stand it. You know, I hate that it all happened, but, you know,
right,
it did change me.
That's what's up.
Get off my cup.
I think for me, similar. Like, I never want to go through that again. I don't ever really want to go back to school ever again. But
because you know everything now.
But I mean, you did finish. You got your degree.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I finished. There were some semesters I had to take breaks.
Me too.
So I was a fifth year graduate, rather than 4 year. A fifth year had like an extra semester essentially, but and like I had gone to school, and that was the other thing for me is that because I was really good at school. Like, it was something that I actually liked to do, and I was really good. And for the first time, I was somewhere where I had to, like, get real study habits. Like, you know, I had to actually do some things that I wasn't used to doing either. And so, you know, I'm around all these kids who are just as smart as I am, and it was like, I don't feel so smart anymore, you know? Right, right. And so that, you getting over that ego, you know, as well was really difficult for me. But I think those setbacks are like kind of your gut check a little bit, you know what, right, I mean? Right. And knowing you're not bigger than anything, you know what I'm saying? And that you have the potential to be in, you know, difficult situations just like anybody else. And no one can tell you that they're not big based on what they are. It's big to you. And so I think that it definitely humbled me in a lot of ways. It taught me a lot of things too about how I want to pursue things moving forward financially. And really how I relay this information to other kids who are looking to possibly pursue their education, and just being like, telling them, be more mindful of like what you want to do, and it's okay to take a gap year to, you know, like, decide what you want to do, because you're making a decision at like 18 years old, and I had to declare early, so I was making a decision for my life pretty much at 19 years old, you know what I mean? And so I tell kids all the time, you know, don't feel rushed, and take your time. Like, you're gonna get where you're going. Take your time, do it your way. And I think, you know, being that was part of, like y'all said, that there were outcomes of all these situations. I think that was definitely one of them, being able to, you know, put that out to other people and kids, and make them feel like you don't have to be rushed there, you know, right, what I mean, right, and right. Take your time, be careful with that too though, because you know that is a very impressionable time in your life, and so how you move through it, just be careful with it, you know. Mm-hmm. Have fun, but be careful. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that, like y'all said, I don't want to do it again, but it made me into a different person. It gave me a lot of understanding, and also helped me connect with a lot of people. But another major thing, that mental health aspect that came with that was one of the biggest things. And understanding, like, depression, anxiety, and, like, especially in the Black community. Like, you know what I mean? I, like I told you, I had no reference for any of that. I had nowhere to look to ask anybody, well, what's happening to me? And it wasn't until I met some other kids who were Black as well, and they said that word for the first time, and they started describing what they were feeling like, and I was like, oh my God, like, you know, this is the first time I'm hearing this, and it made me feel so much better. And I remember having that conversation, and they said that word, and they described it to me, and they were telling me like what they do, and I was just remember like, oh my God, I'm not the only one. Right. So it just made me feel a lot better about it, and you know, then you're able to kind of pick yourself up from there, so.
We have a celebrity.
Celebrity in the building.
Mr. Sean Anthony.
Man, what's up? I'm just a fly on the wall, man. It's a pleasure.
Mr. Sean Anthony, tell the people who you are.
Man, Sean Anthony. That's it. It's a pleasure to listen in on Tips and Sips. You know, y'all been talking about it for a minute to me, man, and I've been anticipating to hear, you know, and check it out. But to be actually be here when y'all record it, this is dope.
Hey. So what do you do?
I do a lot of things. I wear a lot of hats.
But what are you known for?
Radio.
What station?
Right now, Magic 95.5. You can hear me in Columbus, Ohio. Urban One Station. You know. Yeah.
What was that last week when you had the DMX?
DMX, man. Oh, he did a tribute to DMX. Yeah. It was fire. Yeah. Look, I drove around. You owe me some gas money. I kept driving. I was like at the crib, but I kept going. You know, me being fat, I did give me a couple of double jalapeno cheeseburgers from White Castle.
White Castle, I'm seeing you. Did you go through White Castle?
Right, right. But he was rocking, man. Yeah, I appreciate your style, man.
It's all love, man.
So what are you smoking?
This is Rocky Patel Edge. Yeah, this one's a natural. Actually,
okay. Yeah. What do you usually smoke? What's your daily?
Either a Patron or a Rocket Patel.
My man.
Okay.
Like the Patron 3000s I buy here from Pipes and Pleasures.
Oh yeah.
And I do love the higher end, but that and Rocket Patel. I like the edges. An edge, any one of the edges, can be a go-to for me. You know, just for a daily smoke if I got time. You know what I'm saying?
So if you had to pick a celebratory smoke, What would that be?
It would probably be like the anniversary 64. Okay.
Nice. Patron Maduro. That just got voted.
I'm in the presence of royalty, and I smoke like that. You know, I like that. I like that.
Either the 64 or the 26.
Right.
What'd you say to win?
The 64 Natural Torpedo just got voted Cigar of the Year on Cigar Aficionado.
Boom.
Okay. Nice. I saw that today.
You can't go wrong with a natural, though, on a Patron.
Not at all.
Like, I wouldn't be disappointed, but that's my preference. I like the
exactly.
None of my cigars I thought was going to make that list didn't make it, though. I'm sorry.
Your father did make the list?
The aging room. Well, my father made it last year. Not that size, but.
Okay.
I thought the aging room rare collection, the one the orange and gold label, I thought that was a shoo-in to make it, but it didn't. Yeah. Out of all 25 slots. But I was surprised that it was the Padron again. You know what I mean? They always rank high, you know.
But that's a consistent smoke, man. And it, you know, and that's the one where you can appreciate it from the top to the bottom of the label. You know, and it's
like the Principes of the 64 series. If you ever have
Oh
man, they're like little firecrackers. Yeah. Especially the Maduro ones.
My favorite is the regular Padron Executive, because I like the smaller gauge Padron.
Yeah.
It just hits so perfect.
I've noticed that too. The bigger the gauge of some of the Padrons, and like, I've learned that it's a preference of mine to get the smaller gauge.
Yeah. It has a different flavor and a better draw.
Yeah.
The
bigger the gauge, and I haven't gone that big, but it's a more looser draw.
Don't smoke it outside in the wind, because it'll be a 20-minute smoke. You know? But. Yeah. But it is an excellent stick. What do you drink with your cigars? Do you have a preference with that?
Man, depending on the mood, you know, I mean, because right now would be some, if not no scotch, it would be an Irish whiskey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Irish whiskey right now.
Like a Jameson or something like that?
Depending if I'm, you know, tired of dark, I'll be drinking some vodka. Mm. Ironically, I'm drinking rum right now.
So that
depends on, you know, my mood and what my palate is feeling.
Okay.
At one point, you know, if you would have asked me this question, the answer would have been different. You know, it would have been like bourbon. You know, all the different bourbons or what have you, man. But that's like Irish whiskey, a scotch, or some vodka.
Have you ever felt like the liquor changes the taste of the same cigar?
I don't. My intentions be to go into the depth of pairing of an alcohol and a stick.
Right.
But I'd be so engulfed in the experience that I forget to pay attention. You know what I'm saying?
The experience.
But like, I, you know, I'm serious with that. Like, I understand the pairing, because I've tasted the blend of certain things that you drink and smoke and sip and smoke and that taste and all of that.
Right.
But sometimes, like I said, you know, most times I'll lose the, I'll forget about it. My intentions are right, but I'll be more engulfed with the experience of smoking a cigar. You know, the conversations that it allows, right, and the people you get to meet, you know, that's the dope thing about it for me.
Right.
And we have some great conversations over hip hop.
I'm gonna be nice on this. We're going, Brandon.
I don't want to put you on the spot. I don't want to put you on the spot.
You said you're gonna cuss me out.
We was drinking Casamigos then, right? So yeah, that was the liquor.
That was the difference.
In the corner.
I apologize about those remarks.
I didn't take it personal, man. I took it out of love. So what about it? I love it. I love hip hop.
So you have an interesting top 10, right?
Well, it's only interesting because, you know, I was asked, you know, it's a particular artist was in my top 10. I said, they're not in my top 10. And you would have thought I said blasphemy.
And you did. And you did.
I know what it was.
Who was that artist?
Was Tupac not in his top 10?
Oh, no. He. No.
That's what it was.
Well, no, Ed got on him about the Tupac not being
nor
the top
Biggie,
10.
Nor Biggie, and I said that too.
But, okay, so for our followers, he believes anything after 95.
Oh my God. Disclaimer, this is his perspective.
Give him your top five. Give him your top five.
No, I'll give you my top 10, and this is okay. No order. And
Yeah, no order is fair.
I wasn't even prepared for this, but I would say, like, Public Enemy, or you could take Chuck D, however you want to do it, but Public Enemy, KRS-One, Big Daddy Kane, Big Daddy Kane, I met Red Man, Busta Rhymes, these are my top 10.
Right.
Raekwon and Ghostface, Nas, Hov. Did I say Wu-Tang?
No.
Nope. Okay. We pretty much said a lot of the members.
Wu-Tang is high up. You know, that group influenced me, just like Public Enemy influenced me at a young age. You know?
What about N.W.A.?
N.W.A., of course. N.W.A., of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, you categorize groups as well as individuals. Yeah. Which is fair.
But if you were to make me do, you know, single out, I would, like, Ice Cube would be out of that.
Right, right.
Out of N.W.A. And, like I said, Chuck D at first. And Eric B. and Rakim.
You okay.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. Then we started getting the depth of, like, EPMD.
I like EPMD. It
was really dope influence to me in the early ages of hip-hop. And then the latter part, you get into the Outkast, Mobb Deep, you know, Tribe is in my top.
Is Talib in your...
Oh, my God.
Is he in your top 20, Talib Kweli?
Talib Kweli. He's not my favorite.
He's me neither.
He's nice.
He's a dope MC.
Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you.
Let me tell you this. Like, the high tech and Talib Kweli and Mos Def album.
Black Star.
Thank you. Black Star, the first Black Star album. That was a phenomenal
top
project.
Five album to me.
Okay. We're going to edit that part.
I won't even be mad at that. That was a dope album for that particular era, that space and time. And that's how I organize my top 10s and 25s and top, based off of what influenced me at that particular time.
That would be hard to, because Houdini
and Run DMC,
right.
You know, that's like my earlier years.
Right,
those are people that I would study. LL, that's who I missed in my top, that's my
Radio.
Top five.
Right.
Public Enemy, KRS-One, LL Cool J, KRS-One, Big Daddy Kane. They're in my five.
Man, when their first album dropped.
I didn't mention the fifth one. I gotta think about it.
When their first album dropped, it changed. It changed everything.
But that's my top five.
I get that. I give you credit. But what's your favorite genre of music? Because you're a DJ of anything, right?
Music, man. I love the music.
Okay.
You know, my playlist, like, I go from rock to hip. I mean, definitely hip hop and definitely old school R&B.
Yeah, Ashley just likes ratchet, but
that's cool. Okay, like
trap music. I'm sorry, trap music.
I like some of the ratchet too, man.
Thank you, thank you.
She's been introducing me to something.
But mine actually be like decent. Like they're lyrically good, because I don't like the stuff that I can't understand. I mean, I'm in that place too. I'm a little older now, so I can't. Some of that stuff I can't get with.
She just turned 30. Don't give me that little older.
It doesn't even matter, because let me tell you, my parents are a little older. So I also, you hear me in here singing some of the older stuff, and I'll turn on older stations like 80s. I like 80s, 90s R&B, so you'll hear me play a lot of that stuff too.
Okay, I can give you this. I remember I was driving one day and listening to N.W.A., which was probably wrong. He was real young then. And he asked me, this changed my whole aspect on how I have dealt with him. Because, you know, I've basically been with him. I lived with him when he was born. Me and his mom lived together when he was born, okay? So in my life all the time. He asked me, do they really shoot police? And I was shook. And I had to explain to him that it was music. So from then on, I introduced him to Native Tongue. And that changed you, right? And music is powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and from there, I was like, no more gangster rap when I'm with him. And it was all Tribe Called Quest, Jungle Brothers, You know, it was core righteous teachers. It was all of that. Just because, you know, Tribe Called Quest, it was all of that. Just because. And now he appreciates it all. But it kind of made me look different. Like, I couldn't, you know, and I couldn't do that. You know, I couldn't do that.
See, I was big. So I started out only listening, and I'm talking about solely listening to country music. I would only listen to country. I had, no lie, my mom can attest to this, I had these cowboy boots. And I used to be obsessed with, like, nightgowns back then. So I would wear cowboy boots and, like, a diaper and a nightgown. And, you know, like...
This is just 5 years ago?
No, shut up. This is when... back when they used to have, like, the channel on TV where it would play constant music. Mm-hmm. So Saturday mornings, you know, you get up and usually they play, like, you know, old school R&B or something. Y'all are cleaning. And I would throw an entire fit until they would turn on the country station. But everybody else in the house hated country. But I would not let it be quiet until it was what I wanted. So I'd be in there 2-7. Straight up. I had no idea what I was doing. But you could not tell me I was not line dancing. But and then I got introduced to like the kind of rock in middle school, so that was another like way for me,
right.
I like Blink 182, Maroon 5, what was the other one, MCR, Panic at the Disco. Like, I liked all those people. And then for country, I like Rascal Flatts, Shania Twain.
Oh wow.
I feel like who else did I like back then? There was another band that my sister actually got me hip to in high school that I really liked. That was a country band. But my music has always been mixed. But when I choose to, like, if I need like a pick me up, I'm gonna listen to something that's a little bit more hype or with like a little bit more bass, which is usually gonna be, you know, hip hop.
Project Fat.
he's in there. He might be in the shuffle. But no, I
my
actually
favorite trap star.
I actually like a lot of different things, but what I do listen to, because a lot of that stuff you hear is like when I'm at work and I need like something to keep me working, it will be that. But at home when I'm cleaning up, it's either like old school R&B or country music, for real.
It's funny because I can't listen to like rap or, you know, gangster, any of that. While I'm at home, I only listen to it when I'm driving or when I'm out.
That's what I'm saying. That's why you here.
Right. When I'm at home, it's all about, you know, neo soul. I love neo soul.
Yeah.
That's my thing. You know, or old school. But I do listen to jazz. But it's the old school jazz.
Jazz is Art Blakey.
I don't do the new school. The modern jazz. Mm. I like the old Blue Notes. You know, I love
Marshawn.
Oh, not man. Shy, I was listening to
Jamal.
I was listening to Kind of Blue today. You know, Miles Davis. That's what I was rocking today. And I just loved it.
I think jazz is probably my least favorite. But that's because my dad, oh my God, my dad used to play it. I used to get a headache when he would play jazz. And like, the only jazz that I liked that my dad used to listen to was those unwrapped CDs. And they would mix hip hop and they would you know,
acid
cover
jazz.
Yeah, they would cover jazz over top of it. That was the only jazz that I liked that he would play, but everything else he used to try to like make us ride to Cleveland and listen. I'm like, Dad, no, please. I'm suffering in the backseat here. And everybody else would be sleeping. I'd just be back there like, can I get some Tylenol? Like, I can't take it. But I mean, I think as I'm older, I can appreciate jazz. It's not my favorite genre, and I don't think that I don't dive into it too much, but I can definitely appreciate it a little bit more now that I'm older.
Gotcha. Dwayne, what you listen to?
I listen to a little bit of everything as well.
You've been introducing me to things.
I appreciate that. I'm flattered. But lately, I've been listening to the new Nas CD. I like that a lot. I think that's his top three albums. I do.
I think he only has one top one, and that's Illmatic.
It's tough. It could be debated. I like Illmatic. I like Stillmatic.
Stillmatic is better than Illmatic.
And then that Magic. That's the name of that CD. That last one.
Magic
fire.
Is nice, man.
Yeah. It's only 9 tracks,
that
so I can't.
Magic is nice.
I don't know if it belongs in his top three, but if he gave me 2 more solid like that, then it would be in his top three. Okay. So that's why it's a challenge.
He even said King's Disease 3 is coming out. Like, it's still coming
out. He's just
out.
Putting them out. Yeah, I mean, that's like 3 good. Albums in the last 2 years, 2.5 years.
Exactly.
That's okay. The thing that's pretty dope.
And each album got better.
It really did.
And the first one was phenomenal.
Yeah, in my opinion. Agree.
Okay. You know, each album got better.
Y'all,
so y'all haven't listened to the new Nas?
I put him on to the new Nas. I had to sit
there. There was some. I was like, nice. Other than that, I was like,
you gotta listen
changing.
To the out, like in the flow of the album.
That's what he was explaining to me.
You got, because it's produced. Especially, like, go to the first one. It's produced, like, just magnificent, man.
It's funny you said that because, like, a lot of albums are like. Remember, that's how Prince set it up. You know, like you had to listen to one and get to the rest of it. And, you know, a lot of, and back in the day, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire, all of that, you know, you listen to the whole album.
Continuity.
And and you appreciate it, but they don't do that anymore now. Yeah. So now I'm going to have to re-listen to your Nas.
And then when he dropped King's Disease 2, I was like, damn, it gets better?
Yeah, King's Disease 2 is better than the first
one. It gets better?
Yeah. Is Nas in your top five, Brandon?
No, he's not.
Who's in your top five, Brent? I need to know. For this night is over with. Who's your top five? Talib's in there?
No, he's not in my top five. He's in my top ten.
Okay.
So my top five
is hard. Top five is hard, but my top five...
Talib's a dope MC, but go ahead.
Jay-Z, of course.
Fair. Absolutely.
Lil Wayne.
Okay, I believe that.
Biggie.
Okay, it's the three. That's three solids.
Right.
Can you imagine if Biggie just had one more album?
Right.
Just gave me one
more. Isn't that amazing? He didn't have much of anything.
He only had two albums to work off of, literally.
Oh, man.
They're both fire.
Because the one, go ahead.
Eminem.
Okay, absolutely.
He got my top four. All
right, you got me here.
Who?
Eminem.
Oh, okay. That's four.
And then, I'm going to say Kendrick Lamar.
Oh,
I'm going to say Kendrick.
He's got to do a little bit more for me.
Kendrick is
dope. Yeah, overtake
Kendrick
got to do a little bit more, man.
I give you the top four.
Most Def.
But most is in my five.
He's my top
Kendrick
10.
Got to do more?
Yeah.
Yes.
He could gracefully bow out.
Dude, his catalog is great.
Are you serious?
His catalog's not long enough for me. But
I agree with you.
His albums have done exactly what you said they don't do anymore. His album is continuity.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah, that's why I love him. I love J. Cole. And you
I
know
love
I mean?
J. Cole. He's so, my top 10
love
for
J.
Sure.
Cole, too.
My top 10 for sure.
Right.
Something about J. Cole, though, man. I can't put him in top 5.
No, I can't put him in top 5.
It's just something is missing. But I love J. Cole. Especially,
he grew up in the suburbs.
It's not even that, because I mean, I'm not the most, you know, hood person. I grew up in the hood, but, you know, people would know that by me just opening my mouth and just talking. You think I'm a cornball.
Right.
That's what I mean? I've had, you know, friends as dope boys. So I'm saying, God's grace was on my life. You dig what I'm saying? Facts, I was in cars, you know, catches, we hotbox in the car. I'm the only person not smoking until now, right? You know, cats carrying 8-balls and carrying guns. I've never toted a gun in my life. And, you know, not to have a father at the time. You know, my dad was incarcerated. So it's just like, for those things to happen, for me to be able to be a chameleon, like around any type of folk, yellow, red, white, you dig what I'm saying?
Where'd your discipline I'm a chameleon. Come from then?
God's grace, man. I don't even know how I come sometimes. Sometimes I'll be like, when I be getting on my word.
Right.
And, you know, he know I'm a character. Everybody know I got my own flaws. But, like, when it comes to certain words that I can, you know, the church is in us. You feel me? I'm not trying to get all spiritual.
Right,
but, like,
right.
They'll use me as a vessel. I might be on some other stuff here. You be like, Dwayne. But I have a word for you that's really legit. Because,
okay. Yeah.
You know, I'll be used. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying I'm like, but it's just crazy. I don't have a bunch of kids. I haven't been locked up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I just owe that really all to just my beliefs. You dig what I'm saying?
I get it.
Because it's like no way possible.
That.
I've been hit on my bike by a car. I've been in car accidents. No safety belt. You dig what I'm saying?
Did you have the banana seat on the...
no, but I had the do-rag that stopped the split going on my head. That do-rag saved me, trying to save my way, save my cranium, bro. Because it kind of split on the do-rag was like in shreds.
Oh, wow.
But my head was straight under, so that was like a little sheath for me. Like a little protector, you dig?
Wow, that's so, why you still beautiful, man. Do-rag.
I don't know. I don't really look at J. Cole like that, just for credibility. I don't know. I feel like something's missing, but that one song he makes, On the Hillside, that's my favorite J. Cole song. Y'all heard that?
What?
On the Hillside. Mm-hmm. It's on his last album. talk about just like some grown man shit, just becoming better, and you know, I like what he talks about. Okay. That's my whole thing.
Okay. I think they're the last.
Sometimes he loses me though, because he be having some trash tracks too though. This is, I don't know, I can't remember the name of these songs, but some of these songs be garbage.
That's how I feel about Tupac though.
Yes.
Because I don't care about Brenda or her baby.
Yeah, Me Against the World is my favorite Tupac song.
You could have picked any other song.
That's
horrible to me.
That's a beautiful song.
No, but I don't know Brenda. That ain't my baby.
Me Against the World was his best album. I don't care what nobody says. You heard that?
That's because you're deeper than I am, man.
It ain't that deep. There's Brendas in every neighborhood.
Oh, man.
For real.
And ain't none of them have my baby.
And Tupac was very contradictory, man.
Yeah, right. But I'm a simple dude, man. Like when I say simple, I quit liking the Lakers when they got rid of Shaq. I couldn't go with Tupac because I like Biggie. I just, you know, like, I don't like sweet and sour sauce. It's one or the other. You know what I'm saying?
You don't like sweet and sour.
Right. It's like one or the other. I am basic, man.
One or the other.
Right. So that's how I'm cut, man. So, you know, that's my flaw.
Or is it? This has been a great podcast. One of our best ones.
He's cutting us off.
Really? Don't be.
We could go all day.
We're there.
Okay. So, thanks for listening. We are at Pipes and Pleasures.
4244 East Main Street. Come smoke with us.
We'll see you all next time.
Enjoy some knowledge.
We'll see y'all next time. Thank you.
All right, y'all.